Of the clock.
Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the direction from the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So please welcome Kelsey B., a compulsive overeater from Michigan.
Hello, thank you everyone. I appreciate you asking me to share today. Before I get started with my story, I like to just start with a prayer and ask God to join us and guide me in what I'm going to say. So I'm just going to go through the third step prayer and feel free to join, or if you have a different prayer you'd like to say, I honor that too. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. All right, so I think I'll start just by qualifying and telling you, you know, why I'm here and what a little bit about what my story is. So at my highest weight, I had stopped weighing myself. But the last time I weighed myself, I at that point was about 398 pounds. I had bariatric surgery in 2023 as a last ditch effort. and with that, and of course, the help of the program, I've lost 120 pounds, and I'm happy to say that today, by the grace of God, like, I'm abstinent and continuing on that journey, not of just weight loss, but also of just that spiritual and emotional sobriety. And it's one day at a time. In chapter 3 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, many of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. And that was absolutely the case for me. I've overate and used food to deal with my emotions for as long as I can remember. I've been overweight my entire life. As one of three girls, I was the only one who was overweight and definitely noticed it very early on. I noticed that I was very different than my sisters. I was the only one who would eat the sweets in the cupboard and, you know, go sit on the couch, eat the sweet, and go back for more, where my sisters were fine with one helping. At a very young age, I learned to make excuses for my weight. I would say, oh, I'm big boned. I heard that early on in my life, so I stuck to that one. Oh, my mom and her dad were overweight, so it's genetic. I can't help it, right? I can't help I get bad genes. very early on in my life, in early elementary school, my mom had put me, and she went on with me, into a pay and weigh program. And over the years since then, I've tried just about everything. If there was a magic pill or a magic cure, magic diet, whatever it may be, I tried all that. And then I decided I'm just going to accept that I'm fat, right? Like, this is just who I am, and I'm going to love myself for being a fat person, and it's fine. Well, that didn't help me either, because then I just started gaining more weight. I just felt like there was nothing else I could do. And then my husband and I tried to conceive, and we were very unsuccessful. I had doctors telling me that unless I had bariatric surgery and lost weight, because that was the only way that I was going to lose weight, according to doctors, that we would never have kids. So at that point, I rebelled, and I thought, nope, this is not it, right? There's other ways, but I ate over that. I fell into a depression. I ate some more, and I gained over 100 pounds, which led me to my highest weight. So I made that last-ditch effort to lose weight by having bariatric surgery in 2023, and I lost weight. Sure, yeah, that was great. But once I hit a stall, the doctor said, hey, I'm going to put you on this magic shot that's out there, and it's going to be great for you. It's going to help your digestive system. It's going to help your cravings, all these things. Okay, well, that was wonderful. But then My insurance stopped covering it. And this is when I really realized that I was a compulsive overeater, right? So when I was on that medication, I could have a little bit and be satisfied, but I also realized that I could eat sugar and eat a little bit here and then eat a little bit the next day and have a bag of M&Ms last me a week, just a little bag. And that was wonderful. I'd never been able to do that before. Well, then my insurance stopped covering that, and I was going through 4 and 5 bags of M&Ms a day. So I started to realize, man, this is really hard. This is really not healthy. There's more here, right? I've lost weight, so I should be happy, but I'm not happy. I'm reaching for food all the time. And I've really started to feel hopeless. After I had gained back about 20, 25 pounds, I was scared. I heard people talking about surgery being a tool, but how could it be a tool when I felt so out of control with my eating? So my husband was a part of a 12-step program that had earlier in my life led me to Al-Anon. And I had a sponsor there who had said, "Hey, I have joined this program for my eating problem, and I hear you talking a lot about this. Maybe it's something you would like to try." So I was like, yeah, okay. It took me about 2 months to be able to find the courage to attend a meeting. And one night, of course, at dinner, because that's how I dealt with food, I asked my husband to talk, and I found myself ashamed, hiding behind my hands, bawling, telling him that I had a problem with food and I needed help. And that I had been looking at meetings for 2 months and I just couldn't figure out how to go. I didn't have the courage to go by myself. So he was like, "Kelsey, you're fine. You're fine. Go." But so he encouraged me to go. And the next week I went. When I got home from the meeting, he's like, "Are you really a compulsive overeater? Because you don't eat that much. Like, you had surgery, you can't." And so then we had that really hard, embarrassing for me discussion of, yeah, but you don't see me stopping at the grocery store. You don't see me when I'm at work and I hide things in my desk, right? You don't see all of the places that I stop at gas stations and I take it all out of the package so I can eat it in the car, but there's no evidence, right? So, like, all of those things came to light. And that was because in that very first meeting that I went to, I felt immediately accepted when I came in the room. So I had a little bit of courage to share those things when I came home with my husband. But what I also noticed by that first meeting was that I saw a lot of differences and not a lot of similarities, right? I was like, yeah, well, I eat, but I don't eat that much. Or somebody in that first meeting had said that they'd thrown away a pizza and poured something over it so that they wouldn't eat it and went back and ate it again. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never done that. So clearly I don't belong, right? But I was just making excuses, right? And the longer I come in to the rooms, the more I was able to see the similarities and that we have this progressive disease. And regardless of where I'm at on my journey, we all have these similar symptoms that I started to relate with. So the individuals in the room, they encouraged me to keep coming back. They gave me a copy of the OA 12 and 12. I read, I connected with the material, attended meetings. I found another local meeting and started to have a little bit of understanding of really what abstinence is, because it's just very vague to me at the be in the beginning of my journey. But I'll never forget the day that I felt the urge from God, who I call my higher power, I call God, to stay abstinent. So my grandfather had passed away, and I took off work to drive 10 hours away to attend his funeral with family that I was estranged from, sleep in a hotel with family members that I didn't get along with, and drive 10 hours back home. And I could not fathom why God decided this was the time to get abstinent, but I know now, looking back, that this was the perfect opportunity, because it showed me that I could do hard things. So, you see, driving, stopping at gas stations, that was one of my favorite food habits that I had a really hard time letting go of. But this trip, I was in the car by myself for 10 hours. So there was nobody but me saying that I had to stop. And I knew that I could get so far without having to stop for gas. So at that time, I white knuckled staying abstinent, right? But what I found was that I had talked with God more than I ever had before. And that was, I really struggled with my concept of God at this point in my recovery. And so I really connected and started having a relationship. I found that as I was driving, talking to God took away the feelings of cravings. Praying helped me work through things. And I haven't had some of those very beginning, really strong, sugary foods since that point. So that really just tells me that God is in charge because I would never, ever decide to give up my most favorite foods on a 10-hour drive where I could have binged all I wanted. So that was just like that. Sometimes I hear it as like that pink cloud abstinence at the beginning of like I got a little bit of reprieve and that kept me coming back. So when I came back from that meeting, I had tried out a sponsor from one of my local meetings and our schedules just didn't work out. And so I kept looking and I eventually found a sponsor through the footsteps of OA Fellowship, who I credit so much of my abstinence to and working me through the steps. I think it just changed my whole life. I talked to her about my experiences with food, why I wanted to get abstinent, even though I had really a very vague understanding of what that meant. I was desperate and willing to do anything. I had that little sneak peek of reprieve of food, but again, I was still binging and had unhealthy food behaviors outside of that, very specific group of foods that I had let go. So we met daily for an hour, reading through the big book, talking about the content of the big book and how we related to it. She gave me nightly homework, which included, listening to recordings from different speakers. And I started to have a little bit of hope that I could join the ranks of those who recovered if I followed her guidance. I felt and still feel immensely blessed to have worked with this sponsor because one of the reasons is because I quickly made her my higher power, right? I was like, oh, she's going to get me abstinent. But she corrected me again and again as I've worked with her and said, hey, I'm not getting you abstinent. This is all your higher power. And that led me back again and again to realizing that God is the one in charge. Like we are all fellows. We can encourage each other. We can guide each other and deliver the message. But really, we have to have this higher power that leads us through. So I was a little, I'll be honest, I was a little intimidated by that. I grew up around God, but the God I knew was very judgmental. Surely he wouldn't accept me as one of his children to love and care for. I didn't think that I was worthy of love and support. I didn't think I deserved love and support from my family, let alone a God who had so many people in the world to take care of. So with my sponsor's help, we worked through steps 2 and 3, and I re-envisioned God as I know him. I talked to fellows who have had discussed having various concepts of God. And in those conversations, I heard that God is loving, accepting, non-judgmental. And the big book says in the chapter, We Agnostics, that we can have faith and not fully believe. So I interpret this to mean that I can do the next right thing. I can act in faith, even if I don't fully believe in a higher power yet. So I like to say, as I'm telling my story, like I borrowed my sponsor's higher power. She seemed to have a very strong concept of God. And so at first I said, okay, this is what she talks about. I'm going to try that out. And I did that for a little bit, and then became willing to listen and learn to talk to God and really create this relationship that I had started in that journey to my grandfather's funeral. And so now I feel like God and I, like we're friends. We walk on this journey together, and no matter what I do, like God is there. He loves me. He guides me through it. And when I took step three, I just had this overwhelming sense of ease and love, and I started to experience some more true peace around food. So through the program, my sponsor and God, we walked through steps 4 and 5, which were incredibly eye-opening to me. I lived my life believing that I had a right to be resentful towards others and that holding on to resentments really kept me safe. Because surely, if I was resentful at them, then they couldn't hurt me again. But what I learned is that even when it was hard to see, I had a part in every situation in my life where I held a resentment. I also found out that things I had done, my deepest, darkest secrets, weren't the end of the world. I'd shared them with God and my sponsor, and I still felt love and acceptance and understanding from both of them. And in fact, I felt closer than I ever had with God, and my sponsor still took my phone calls, which amazed me. Through identifying my character defects and, or my sponsor called them character defenses, and I've really connected with that. I realized that the things that no longer served me, I could ask God to remove them, and that maybe they served me at one point in my life, but they're not serving me now. So I was terrified that taking steps 8 and 9 would lead to relapse and that I wouldn't be able to let go of these character defects. Making amends with people in my life felt really daunting. My family of origin is one that sweeps things under the rugs, right? Like, we rarely find actual solutions. We don't own up to our mistakes without defending them or forgiving each other. So this idea was scary to me. My family is very good at emotional manipulation and guilt. So in tackling these hard conversations, I truly had to rely on God, and working step 6 and 7 and asking for removal of my defects and guidance in ways that I could help in removing them. I found myself sitting across from people I would have never sat down with for vulnerable, honest conversations and walking away with greater peace. So not one of my amends did I walk away with complete agreeance on subjects. So I just wanted to make that clear. I didn't change anybody's mind about how they felt about things, but I walked away knowing that certain members of my family may never accept me for who I am, and that our relationship may never be what I wanted it to be, but I didn't have to defend or argue about my past actions. I could say what I did. I could apologize for the harm I caused. I could rectify my actions moving forward, and then I could listen to what that person had to say. But I also could set healthy boundaries if those things became abusive. And that was a huge step for me. All right. So from there, that was a really hard and still is a hard thing for me to accept that relationships aren't going to be what I want them to be, right? But I heard somebody say once, and it really stuck with me, that we can wrap individuals in our lives in a blanket and give them a hug and hand them to God. And they're like a baby, right? Like, you swaddle a baby and you can give them to God, and then God takes care of them. So when these things creep up in my life, that's what I have been trying to do and continue to do on a daily basis, is give them back to God. Because I no longer have to be responsible for their feelings. So with every amends, I gained a little bit of peace, and a little bit of neutrality towards food. I also felt so much more in sync with God. I trusted that even when the outcomes were different than I wanted, God had a plan. I'd been playing like a tug of war with God my whole life, trying to control my life with my life and those people around me. And through the step work, I started to set down the rope, right? But I often picked it back up. I'd be like, okay, God, here you go. I'm gonna drop it. You can win the tug of war, but no, just kidding. I don't like where that's going. I feel uncomfortable, so I'm gonna pick that rope up and play tug of war with you again. But steps 10 and 11 really helped me set it down, and trust in God. So I have to remind myself multiple times a day not to pick the rope up. But he and my fellows often remind me that I don't have to. When I try to be in control, or just want to be in control even, I find that my life starts to spin out of control. So the more I want it, the more I lose it. But step 12 truly has kept me abstinent, working with others for the sake of working with others. And not to selfishly feel good about healing someone has been really humbling. So I've had to constantly work on letting go of my character defects. And as a recovering people pleaser, not giving advice is so hard. But God constantly places me in situations where I can practice letting go of my defects without working with others. I think I could go through life and think like I've got it all together, but My sponsees truly keep me abstinent. When I get frustrated with life or I feel resentments, I have to hold myself accountable to working the same program that I suggest to them. This recently has meant going through the 12 steps again. So I've found another sponsor to gain a new perspective, and I've had a reminder that we never stop learning and growing. So while I'm abstinent from food, that's just the first part for me. So I'm excited to keep growing and moving forward in my program of finding emotional sobriety and truly becoming happy, joyous, and free. I've found that living abstinently doesn't just mean letting go of food. I've had to change how I deal with life and all of the situations that occur in my life. So my disease is one of want and power. Like, I want to be in power. I want control. I want to control how other people see me. I want to hide the fact that I'm human and nowhere near perfect. I tell myself lies about others seeing me as less than or in stark contrast, telling myself I'm better than others. But I've lived this life of needing a perfect house, perfect car, perfect job, right? Well, inside, I've never felt happy or satisfied. And so today, being abstinent means acting in a way that holds me accountable to God's will. So all of those things, wanting to be perfect and all of that, I have to let that go because that's not what God wants for me. I have to act in a way that shows my honesty and truth. If I don't, I'll relapse, which may start with my actions, but it's going to end with me and the food, and I know that I can't go there again. Yeah, I wouldn't trade the best days of my prior self for the worst days that I have now. So by working the program and truly using my tools, I've learned how to be happy with imperfection. It's still super hard. I'm currently, back on that fertility journey with my husband, and it's a test of my program to be able to know that God has a plan. But I can do that every day because of the tools that this program gives me. Oh gosh. So this journey keeps me growing, building a relationship with my fellows, with God, and finding more peace and serenity in life. So I'm very thankful for the bumps in the road that have led me to OA, and I don't know where I'd be without OA, but I do know that I wouldn't be experiencing the happiness and peace that I know today. So I know that I'm a little bit early, but I think that's all I have for you today. I will say I will put my phone number in the chat. I'm always available for outreach and calls, texts, whatever, and I do have some availability to sponsor as well. So thank you all for asking me to speak today. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Kelsey. Thank you for sharing your story. That was great.